Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Chof Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We are picking up today's Gemara in the middle of a discussion. The general topic that we have been dealing with is Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim, the necessity of a Kohen washing his hands and legs, primarily from the Kior, the water tank that was located in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara that we left off with was dealing with the possibility of a non-sanctified vessel also as serving the need for Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim. In other words, in addition to the Kior, we have already learned from the Posuk that uses the word Yirchatsu, which was viewed as an extra word in the Torah, an extra word meaning a word available to derive some additional information from it, and we were marbe on the third, fourth line from the top, any service vessel, sanctified vessel, that's part of the Beis HaMikdash collection of vessels, that they could be used in Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim. The question was raised, if you're going to be learning from the extra word, from the riboy, from the word Yirchatsu, to include other service vessels in addition to the Kior, what about including, going all the way, and including even Klei Chol? Klei Chol meaning non-sanctified vessels. Abaye answered that a Klei Chol we cannot include, and that's based on a Kal V'chomer from Kano, from the base of the Kior. In physically speaking, the base of the Kior was capable of containing water, and the base, though, was not allowed to be used as a source of Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim. In our sugya, we also noted, by way of the markings, the fourth line from the top, we inserted between the Gemara and the Rashi, namely to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a Roman numeral number 1, and on the side, it has been explained that 1 and 2, which you will see a number of lines down the page, are under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin we've written in. These are two gishos, lelamed, two approaches to teach, minayin shein mekachin yadayim v'raglayim l'kli chol. From where do we know that we do not use a kli chol for this sanctification of hands and feet, of the kiddush yadayim v'raglayim? The first approach was based on a kal v'chomer from the kano, from the kan, from the base of the kior. We can reread that kal v'chomer, which we learned last time, which was the point that we left off the shiur. So if we pick up the Gemara from five lines from the top, you will see that it says, Lo matzis amris, the klei chol, we cannot say, mi kal v'chomer mikano, based on kal v'chomer logic from the base. Uma kanoi shenimshach imoi eino mekadesh, mind you, the base that has been anointed with the shemen ha-mishcha, the special anointing oil, together with the kior, and yet it, the kano, is not suitable for kiddush yodayim v'raglayim. Klei chol she'eino nimshach imo, profane or mundane vessels that were never sanctified along with it, eino din she'eino mekadesh, and all the more so, it is not suitable for kiddush yodayim v'raglayim. The Gemara, right after the bracketed section, you can see in the text we have a brackets right after that, and we discussed this in our previous year as well. Right after the brackets, the Gemara has a retort to the rejection, if you will, of this Kal V'chomer. And if you skip to the section right after the brackets, you'll see once again a triangle positioned point up, which represents questions in this particular sukya. Omar le marzutra braid rav mori ravina ma lekano she'ein osui letocho. How can you try to prove your case from the kan, from the base of the kior, to general clay choil? The kan has a limitation in that it's not designed for containing liquids within its walls. In other words, it serves as a base to support the kiyar, a pedestal, if you will, to support the kiyar. It's not designed for holding liquids. Toimar b'klei chol she'osu l'tocho, should you say the same thing with regard to mundane vessels that are designed to hold liquids? And since they are designed to hold liquids, in this case hold water, maybe the klei chol would be suitable for use as a source of kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. The bracketed section, which we must go over now, which in effect is the true beginning of today's shiur, deals with the kal v'chomer that was mentioned just before. In the making of that kal v'chomer logic, we said, mind you, the cane of the kiyor, the pedestal of the kiyor, which is sanctified, is not suitable for kiddush. So in the brackets, we discuss this, we focus on this. The kano minolon, and the base, from where do we know that it is not mekadesh? Tisanyo. Before we go too much further, it's important for those who are new to the markings to recognize that we have a length indicator, a bracket length indicator. That's written in or drawn in to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. In this case, you see a dashed, dotted vertical line. The dashed, dotted vertical line is special or specified as a length indicator for brackets. So you can see this by noticing the length of that line. You can notice the lines of Gemara that are contained within the bracketed section. So continuing in the question at hand is, how do we know that the base or the pedestal of the kiyor is not suitable for kiddush? Tisanyo. We have a Tanaic source, and in our marking system, Tanaic sources are almost always included in a frame to set it aside from the rest of the Gemara literature. So the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yochol Yehe Kano Mekadesh Kederech Shakior Mekadesh. Can we suggest that the base of the kiyor should be able to sanctify the same way that the kiyor is used in sanctification? Talmud Lomar v'asiso kiyor nechoshes v'chanoi nechoshes. That's the posuk in the Torah. L'nechoshes hikshesiv, with regard to the material, in this case the copper, nechoshes, the copper material from which the kiyor itself was made, so the cane, the base, is compared to the kiyor itself with regard to nechoshes, with regard to the material, v'lo l'dover acher, but not with regard to any other aspects. So that as far as the kiddush capacity is concerned, the sanctification capacity that the kiyor has, that is true of the kiyor, not true of the pedestal. Amalei marzutra brei derav mori deravina. You can see what the triangle position point up in this sugya was indicated by the key found on the previous daf on Chof Aleph Amud Beis. This presents a question: How can you say that clay chol are not suitable for kiddush based on a kal v'chomer from the cane? We can respond. We can weaken the kal v'chomer as follows: Ma lekanoi she'en osui l'tocho. Tomar b'klei chol she'osui l'tocho. How can you say, based on the cane, which is not designed, ain osu l'tocho, it's not designed to contain, in this case, liquids within its airspace, within its walls. So maybe that's the reason that the cane is not used for kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. Should you say the same thing by mundane vessels, non-sanctified vessels that are designed for holding liquids? So at this point, notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a Roman numeral number 2, we have a new approach to deal with the issue of how do I know the klei chol are not acceptable? Elo, mimenu, limute klei chol. The pasuk that was cited in our previous shiur, you can see this, we've included the psukim, the necessary psukim on the side of the Gemara. This is a pasuk from Shmos Perek Mem Pasuk Lamed Aleph in the upper inner corner of the page. We've included it, and it said there, V'rochatsu mimenu Moshe Aaron, etc. The word mimenu is a limitation expression. Mimenu meaning you shall wash your hands and feet from it. From it meaning the kiyor, and the Gemara goes on, limute klei chol, to the exclusion of mundane vessels. Ihochi, if mimenu is a limitation, klei shoreis nami, let us exclude other service vessels as well? The Gemara answers to that. That we won't do. Ha, Ravi Rachmana Yirchatsu. The Torah nevertheless has included other service vessels through the use of the word Yirchatsu. Uma Rois, what is it that you see that I'm going to include other clay shores and not include clay choil? Answer, Ze Toun Mishicha Kamohu. Clay shores in general, general realm of service vessels in the Beis HaMikdash require anointing like the Kior itself. The Kior being the archetype of that which is suitable for Kiddush Yodayim V'Raglayim. Veze, the mundane vessels, Ein Toun Mishicha Kamohu. They, however, are not. They are not anointed or with the special anointing oil like the Kior. Hence, they are the subject of the exclusion, whereas the Klei Chol are the subject of the inclusion. The Klei Shores, that is, are the subject of the inclusion, which was based on the word Yirchatsu. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic, and on the side we introduce topics and structural notes under the heading Nosei, representing topic, and Mivneh, representing the structure. Sometimes we combine the two into one note, and that's what we have on the side of the Gemara. You'll notice the Nosei, Mivneh, we feature a diamond. As you could see, if you scan ahead a little bit in the Gemara text, you'll see a series of diamonds, and a double underline as well. The double underline, the diamond introduces a series of something, in this case, we'll see it's explained shortly, and the double underline appears under the word Lim'uti. And the explanation of the sugya is shlovim. We are going to see stages. Levarer ma'bo Reish Lakish lemayit. What is Reish Lakish trying to exclude? B'may dekomar through his statement that he says kol hamashlim lemei mikveh, mashlim lemei kior, lerevius eno mashlim. We'll see. He says that. Anything that is mashlim, a main mikveh, that serves to complete the required quantity of water in a mikveh, is also suitable for helping to complete the required quantity of water for a kior, for the kior in the Beis HaMikdash. However, when it comes to the necessity of using a revius of water, let us say, for netilas yadayim, for the washing of hands before eating bread, there's a halacha, one must wash his hands from a revius of revius halug, say a quarter of a lug worth amount of water, and the idea of if you need to mashlim the revius, so that cannot be done in the same way that you're mashlim the main mikveh and the kior. So the question is, what is Reish Lakish trying to exclude? Namely, what is suitable to be mashlim a mikveh, and is not suitable for being mashlim the revius? Turning to the Gemara, Omar Reish Lakish, kol hamashlim lemei mikveh, any substance that's suitable, any. We'll see the Gemara will introduce these things. Substance that's suitable for completing the required amount that a mikveh must contain. Aleph, mashlim lemekior, beis ulerevius eino mashlim, is suitable for being mashlim the required shear of water of the kior, which is the amount of water that's suitable for the washing, the kiddush yadayim v'raglayim of four kohanim. Whatever that is, whatever is mashlim, the mekior, that same substance is, or that same thing, or whatever that the Gemara will have to discover, is not suitable for being mashlim, the revius of water. Limutei mai. The Gemara is now is raising the key question here. What is not mashlim a revius that would be mashlim a mikveh? The diamonds indicate a series, where, as we mentioned before, attempts to determine what is the substance that will satisfy the statement of Reish Lakish. In lema limute tit hanoduk. If Reish Lakish is coming to exclude from helping mashlim a revius, but yes, mashlim a mikveh, liquid clay, tit hanoduk, liquidy clay, Hechidomi, what's the nature of the liquidy clay? E deporos shoichavishoisimimenu, if a cow would bend over and drink from this afilu l'revias nami, it would be suitable for the revias of water for netil sidayim. The E ain poros shoichavishoisimimenu, and if it's not liquidy enough, in other words, that a cow would not bend over and drink from it, then afilu lemikveh nami ein mashlim, then it wouldn't be suitable for being mashlim a mikveh either. So we're looking for something that we could draw a distinction between the din of revias and the din of mikveh. So once again, if a cow would drink from it, it's good for both mikveh and revias. If a cow won't drink from it, it's good for neither mikveh nor revias. Ela limute yavchushin adumim. Maybe what Reish Lakish is saying is yavchushim adumim. These are some type of a red water creature, insect or worm, some type of creature. For our purposes, it's not important to offer an actual zoological translation of the expression. We'll refer to it henceforth as simply yavchushin adumim. The one thing that we can add is that these are formed in water. They're water creatures. They're born in water or formed in water. So if maybe Reish Lakish is coming to exclude from the ability of being mashlim a revias these things, these yavchushin adumim, but would be suitable for a mikveh. The Gemara rejects this as well. Afilu binayhu nami. Even if you had a complete pool of yavchushin adumim, they would be suitable. In other words, what the Gemara is rejecting, the grounds on which the Gemara is rejecting yavchushin adumim, is because Reish Lakish used an expression mashlim lemei mikveh. Mashlim means to complete. In other words, it serves as an addition to, but not the main source of. So if we're talking about yavchushin adumim, then as the Gemara says, afilu binayhu nami, you could have a mikveh so made of these creatures, and they're not there just for mashlim, but the entire mikveh could be made of them. And they're not just to complete a mikveh, but the entire mikveh could be made from them. Daha Tanya, we have the following source: Reb Shimon ben Omer, kol shetchilas briyoso min hamayim, any creature whose formation is from the water. And in this case, like the Avchushin Adumim, Matvilin Bo, one could immerse himself in them. The Omar Rav Yitzchok Bar Avdimi, Matvilin Ba'ino Shadag. A person could immerse himself in the eye of a fish. Would have to be a rather large eye. The Gemara elsewhere in an Agadic section deals with a very large eye of a fish. But for our purposes, we're taking it at face value, since the fish is Brioso Min Hamayim, and the eye is jelly-like or liquidy, one could conceivably immerse himself in that. So the things that are briyosim and amayim, and in our case yavchushin adumim, they're not just mashlim a mikveh, they could form a mikveh entirely. Omar Rav Popa, limuti nosan sa'o v'notal sa'o. Rav Popa explains that we will find a difference between the din of mikveh and the din of a revias of mayim that's used for netilas yadayim, for the washing of hands outside of the Beis HaMikdash, of course, the washing for bread. The distinction will be regarding this particular halacha. So let us introduce the halacha before reading the source in the Gemara. First of all, let us imagine that one had a complete kosher mikveh. And then a complete kosher mikveh is made up of a 40 sa'ah, a quantity of water. Let us say that a person took a sa'ah, as we mentioned, a sa'ah is a quantity of water. He took a sa'ah of fruit juice, of mei peros, and poured it into a mikveh that was complete, a 40 sa'ah mikveh. Now he poured an additional sa'ah of fruit juice into the mikveh. You'd have, technically speaking, you'd have now 41 sa'ah of liquid. He then would proceed to withdraw a sa'ah of liquid from the mikveh and pour it out somewhere. And then he would add another sa'ah of fruit juice to the mikveh. Once again, it would be after he had originally had 40 sa'ah, added the initial mei peros, creating 41. withdrawing a saw, leaving 40 saw of liquid. Now another saw of fruit juice, 41 saw of liquid. And he repeats this process again and again. So if one were to do that, first of all, we should mention very importantly that the initial pouring in of that first saw of fruit juice into a 40 saw mikveh, the saw of fruit juice is botel. It becomes void in the mikveh. It loses its identity, so to speak, in the mikveh of 40 saw. One could conceivably do this process again and again and again, let us say up till 20 times, which in the worst case scenario, we have to just say something it's a little bit abstract, a little imaginative, but each time after he poured the fruit juice into the mikveh, let us say he was withdrawing a saw of pure water. Of course, it's hard to imagine that because when you're dealing with liquid mixture, there's generally speaking an equal distribution of molecules. But if in your mind's eye you could imagine that he was withdrawing a saw of water each time he was making that withdrawal, at the end of the story, if he does this, let us say 19 times, just for keep whole numbers, if he would do this 19 times, what would be left at the end of the day? He would have in effect 21 saw of water with 19 saw of fruit juice there. That would be okay. However, to do a similar action on a much smaller scale with a revius of water that you're going to use for Netilas Yadayim. So if he would, let's say, given he had a revius of water, if he would add a quarter of a revius of fruit juice into the water and then withdraw a quarter of a revius of the total liquid, he would, and try to continue doing that, that would not be allowed. And Rashi explains, since the initial quantity was only a revius of water, we'll just say a cupful of water, it's an insignificant quantity that would allow us to activate the institution of bittul. Of the fruit juice, the voiding of the fruit juice when poured into it. So, according to Rav Papa, we have a point of distinction between that which is mashlim mikveh and that which would not be mashlim by a revius. Let's now read this inside the Gemara. Once again, with the beginning of line, with the diamond, Omar Rav Papa, Limute, Reish Lakish's original comment is coming to exclude Nosan Sa'ah V'Notal Sa'ah, the pouring in of a saw of fruit juice and the withdrawal of a saw of the mikveh. Disnan, we have a Tanaic source that teaches this. Mikveh Shiyesh Bo Arboim Sa'ah Mechuvanos, a mikveh that contains exactly 40 saw of water, kosher mikveh water. Nosan saw the notal saw hareza kosher. If one were to pour in a saw of other liquids, without getting into details, we're going to use just one of the examples that are cited by Rashi. If he pour in fruit juice, a saw of fruit juice, and then after he poured that in, he then withdrew a saw of liquid from the mikveh, that is okay. The Omar Rav Yehuda Bar Shilo, Omar Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan ad rubo. He would be able to do this until he gets to a majority of the liquid in question, a majority of the mikveh. And when we say up till a majority, Rashi points out, but not including a majority. Therefore, for using whole number purposes, we will say that he could do this, since there are 40 saw in your initial mikveh, he could do this procedure 19 times, and thereby he's not going over the majority. It remains a minority of fruit juice relative to the water of the mikveh at the end of the day. Omar Rav Papa, im kodach boi revius. Rashi explains, this is an expression that we saw in a previous sugya as well, and Rashi uses the same pirush as he did over there. Rashi, you can see in the inside, a little more than halfway down the wide lines underneath the Gemara, Rashi says, im kodach revius, bedoifen hamikveh, that means he drilled a hole in the side of a mikveh, v'hamayim nimshachin sham, and the water that's in the mikveh flows into this little hole, the hole on the side of the mikveh that's a revius in size. The afal pi shinismatu hamayim, even though there is now a reduction in the water because a revius of water filled up this hole in the side, the ein mu'rovin meha mikveh bo'isikidicha, and the rest of the mikveh is not attached to the water that's in this drilled hole. Nevertheless, Rav Papa says that hole that's drilled into the side of the mikveh that's filled up with mikveh water, even though the mikveh, this water is not attached to the rest of the water of the mikveh, is suitable for using for immersion purposes, immersion to achieve tara. Well, you'll ask, well, what could you possibly immerse in such a small quantity of water? So Rav Papa goes on to say, matbilin boy machatin v'tsinorios. One could immerse in it little machatin would be pins, tsinoros are little forks that are used in preparation of gold thread. The reason that this revius is suitable is because it comes from a kosher mikveh. So since it originates in a kosher mikveh, it is itself serves as a source of purification. Amar of Yirmiyah, Amar Reish Lakish. Before we go on in the Gemara, let us glance at the side to our topic heading. We have a no say. Mei kior, eze mayim ksherim la. Which water is suitable for the kior? We'll touch on mei mikveh, mikveh water, or mayim chayim. Mayim chayim is water that comes from a live spring. Might be pointed out that a mikveh, a standard mikveh, is made up of rain water that accumulates in the mikveh. Mikveh literally is a pool or that which is dug out of the ground that will contain the water. So the main mikveh is rainwater that is not drawn by vessels and poured into the mikveh, but it's rainwater that accumulates in that particular pool. Mayim chayim is water that comes from a live spring. That would not be suitable as a mikveh, but it's mayim chayim, a live spring itself, is suitable for immersion for numerous different topics. Continuing now in the Gemara, Omar of Yirmiyah, Omar Reish Lakish, Mei Mikveh, Ksherim LeMei Kior. Water that is from a mikveh, even though it's not a mikveh, is not live spring water, it's kosher to be used in a kior. Lemeimra, this halacha of Reish Lakish suggests delo mayim chayim minhu, that the mei kior in general do not come from a live spring. Because if the mei kior in general would come from a live spring, they would not be kosher as a mikveh. It would not be a source of water kosher for a mikveh. So at this point there are three terms that were just used. You have the term mei kior, and we see mei mikveh, and we saw the term mayim chayim. And we're making associations right now. Reish Lakish is saying that mei kior is associated with mei mikveh. By saying that, you're basically saying that the mei kior would not have in it mayim chayim. Because if the mei kior would have in it mayim chayim, Reish Lakish would not be able to say that the mei kior could be from a mikveh. The Gemara asks, v'hotanya, but we have a Tanaic source that features the washing of the limbs of a sacrifice. And the pasuk in the Torah says, the aker v'akrayim yurchatz b'mayim. The limbs of a korban are to be washed in water. And now we darshan b'mayim v'lo b'yayin. By the Torah's emphasis on water, we say to be washed in water and not in wine. B'mayim v'lo b'mozug. in water and not in diluted wine. B'mayim, the word b'mayim also serves l'rabois sh'ar mayim, to include other waters, even gathered waters. The kal v'chomer l'mei kior, and certainly the mei kior would be kosher for the rechitzas ho'evorim. My kal v'chomer l'mikveh. What is the basis of this comment of and certainly mei kior? Lav demayim chayem ninu. Isn't it because the mei kior is water from a live spring? And being that that's the case, we see from this comment that water from a live spring is suitable for the kior. And if that's the case, you're basically saying that the mei kior had in it live spring water, and that would exclude mei mikveh, and hence a question on Reish Lakish. The Gemara says, loi. The idea of the kal v'chomer l'mei kior is not a description of the kind of water in the kior, rather, dekodesh. It's a reference to the fact that the water comes from the kior. That if we're saying that any water could be used to wash the limbs of the sacrifices, then certainly the water that comes from the kior, in the sense that it is sanctified, it's coming from the kior being a kli shoreis, and the halacha is that anything that is placed in a kli shoreis becomes sanctified. So if mundane waters, any gathered waters could be used for the washing of the sacrificial limbs, certainly water that comes from the kior, which is sanctified. The Gemara asks, is that really the explanation of a kal v'chomer l'mei kior? Ukedishi mal yusahi, is the fact that it is sanctified a positive feature? V'ha tana debe Shmuel, we have the following Tanaic source that eventually will teach us that that sanctified waters would not be suitable for the washing of the behema limbs, of the sacrifice limbs. The source says mayim. It also features the word from the pasuk, and we learn she'ein lahem shem levai, that they don't have any compound name. Yotsu mei kior, and notice how we've dashed underlined this. This is the significant point of bringing in this source. We thereby saying, to the exclusion of waters that have shem levai compound names, yotsu mei kior, that's to the exclusion of mei kior sheyesh lahem shem levai. They're referred to as mei kior, not just by the term mayim, but rather mei kior. So we see from here that where you see the word mayim, and we have that in the case of the Rechitzas Evorei HaKorban, Mei Kior or Pasul. So what is meant by the expression in the source that says Kal v'chomer? We saw on Omid Aleph a Tanaic source that said for Kal v'chomer the Mei Kior, when right now you're telling me that Mei Kior are not suitable. El Olav Dereuyin LeMei Kior. Rather, we are describing the nature of the water that is used for the Mei Kior. And we're saying that by saying the kal v'chomer l'mei kior, we're talking about, and certainly water that would be suitable for the kior. Not to wash the limbs of the sacrifice from the kior, that would not be good. But you can wash the limbs of the sacrifices from water that you could use in the kior. So what is that? That's mayim chayim. That would be a reference to to Almo. The Gemara says Almo Mayim Chayim Ninhu. So we see from here that the water that in general is in the kior is from a live spring. And if that be the case, we would then have a kasha. We'd have a question on Reish Lakish that said May Mikveh are kasha for the kior. Because if you're telling me that Mayim Chayim, Mayim water that comes from a live spring is that which is used in the kior, that would serve to preclude mikveh water, which is specifically not from a live spring. So what are we to do with Shitas Reish Lakish that said that mei mikveh is kosher for the kior? The Gemara answers, Tanoihi, the issue at hand is a machlokas tanoi, it's a tanaic controversy. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, mei kior, Aleph, first opinion, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, mei ma'ayon heim, they come from a live spring. Sha'ar Meimos Hain, they come from other sources of water, namely not from a live spring, and that second opinion would be like Reish Lakish. Orel. On the side of our Gemara, we have a new topic here, Nosei, Orel, Minolon de Mechal Avoda. Our Gemara will be asking, from where do we know that an Orel is profanes, ruins the sacrificial service? So in the Gemara, Orel, Minolon, from where do we know that an Orel, that's an uncircumcised individual, a Kohen that was never circumcised, he is unsuitable to do the Avodas HaKorbanos, and if he does, he's Mechalal, he ruins the sacrifice. Omar Rav Chisda, Dover Zeh, this particular point that an Orel, a Kohen Orel's Mechal Avoda, Mitaris Moshe Rabbeinu Lo Lamadnu, we did not learn this from the written Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, Midivrei Yecheskel ben Buzi Lamano. However, you can find a reference to this halacha in the psukim that are contained in the book of Yecheskel, the prophet. Yecheskel's full name is Yecheskel ben Buzi, Yecheskel the son of Buzi. What does the pasuk in Yecheskel say? Kol ben Nechor erel le ve'erel basur lo yavo el mikdashi. That any kohen who is a erel leiv, he's a rebellious individual, or an Erel Boser, uncircumcised, is not to enter the Beis HaMikdash. Uminolon de Machli Avoda, from where do we know that if a Kohen who is an Erel Boser serves in the Beis HaMikdash, that he would ruin the sacrifice? Dichtiv, there's another posuk that says, Bavi'achem b'nei nechor erle lev ve'erle boser li'os b'mikdashi l'chalal es beisi. So we have dashed underlined the key expressions. You see Erle Bosar and Lechalel. So we see from here that if they do perform the sacrificial service, they will Mechalel, they will ruin the Avoda. Tana Rabbanan. The Pusuk says Ben Nechor. This is a citation from the Pusuk a few lines up. You can see we have arrows on the side of the more immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you scan up a couple lines, you'll see a parallel arrow, and on that upper line, you see the Ben Nechor expression in the Pusuk from Yecheskel. So this Tanaic source starts off with that quote, Ben Nechor. Yochol Ben Nechor Mamish. Could it be that the Pusuk is saying a Gentile literally? Talmud Lomar Ero Lev. The pasuk clarifies itself that it's not addressing the issue of a Gentile serving in the Beis HaMikdash, but rather a person whose heart is uncircumcised, meaning is of a rebellious, he rebels Judaism. Im Kain, in other words, he's a Jewish individual who has become rebellious to his religion. Im Kain, Ma Talmud Lomar Ben Nechor. So what is the role of the expression Ben Nechor? Answer, Shenisnakru Maisov La'aviv Shebashamayim, that his Maisov, his ways have become, Nisnakru means become strange to our Father in heaven. In other words, in one word, rebellious. The Ainli Elo Erol Lev, from this I only see one who is rebellious, Erol Bosor Minayan, from where would I know that someone who is physically uncircumcised, even though philosophically he is totally in line, totally fine, a believing individual, but nevertheless he has a defect in the sense that he has not been circumcised. Talmud Lomar ve'erel basar. The pasuk includes him as well as being unfit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Utsrichi, the Gemara points out that it's necessary to cite both of these deficiencies, someone of a spiritually rebellious and the case of physically uncircumcised, and I could not figure one out from the other. It's necessary for the post to state these two deficiencies. The ikos of Rachmona Erel Bosser, had the Torah, the scriptures written just Erel Bosser as being unfit, mishum demois, because the situation of being uncircumcised is considered mos, sometimes is translated as disgusting. Aval Erelev, the low mois, one who is of a rebellious nature, even though it's quite unworthy, nevertheless, it's not categorized as disgusting. Aim low, maybe that would not be a sufficient grounds for rendering him unfit. Therefore, I have to teach the case of Erolev as well. V'yashmin an Erolev, and had I taught the case of Erolev as being unfit, mishum de'ein libo l'shamayim, because his heart is not heavenward. Avo ero boser de libo l'shamayim, but someone who is uncircumcised, and there's a machlokas rishonim here as to why he's uncircumcised, but one of the pirushim that is offered is because he's medically dangerous for him to become circumcised. And therefore, his only reason for non-circumcision is because of medical considerations, but not because of philosophical issues. And that's why the Gemara here says an Erol Boser that his libo is l'shamayim, his heart is heavenwards. Aim low. I would think that maybe he's not rendered unfit. Tzrichi. Therefore, it's necessary the pasuk to write not just the Erol Lev, the rebellious one, but also the Erol Boser as being unfit. Tomei posel. The Mishnah mentioned that if a Kohen who is Tomei does the Avodah, he is Mechalel the Avodah. The sugya that we are about to begin is a sugya that is rather long, and on the side of our Gemara we have introduced this under our No Say heading and indicated in parentheses Ad Chof Gimel Amud Beis, so that we'll be preoccupied with this issue of Tomei posel until that point in the Gemara, Chof Gimel Amud Beis. We have a somewhat rarely used marking. We call it the firebox. It's this rectangle, squiggled rectangle that surrounds, generally speaking, a name. Sometimes it might surround another item, but in most occasions it's a name. And it's a name that preoccupies the Gemara for quite a while. It's a shita that's the focus of the discussion of the Gemara for at least an omid of Gemara, and oftentimes more. In this case, it's the Ziknei Dorom that have the firebox around them. On the side of our Gemara, we have written, Shitas Ziknei Dorom, the opinion of the Ziknei Dorom, literally the sages of the south, the Ha Dikatoni de Tomei Mechalel Avoda, that which our Mishnah teaches, that a Tomei ruins the sacrificial service, Eino Kolel Tomei Mace. It does not include a situation of a kohen whose tuma was absorbed as a result of his contact with a mace, with a corpse. That is not included in the Mishnah's ruling. And why is Tomei treated, let us say, so leniently? Demitoch shemratze b'tzibor, since there's precedent for tumas mace being accepted on a public level, meratze nami biyochid. It's considered acceptable, albeit bidieved, but we say that the tzitz with meratze, the Kohen's golden headplate, has the power of atoning or making acceptable a korban, in this case according to Ziknei Dorom, that was done by a Kohen who was Tomei Mace. What do we mean by the expression that mitoch shemeratze b'tzibor? So there's the classic case is the case of a korban tzibor, and most often the popular topic that is associated with this is a korban pesach. If the tzibor, if rove of the population are tomei mace, there are many other details to the sugya. There are quite a few Dapim in Maseches Psochem dedicated to this issue. We're just saying things in very, very general terms right now. But if rov of the population is Tomei Meis, the Korban Pesach is offered on its ordained date, the 14th of Nisan. And even though, generally speaking, when an individual is Tomei, so he doesn't bring his Korban, nevertheless, if rov of the Tzibur is Tomei, it is done on that day, on the 14th of Nisan. The Torah has a topic concern called Pesach Sheni, which touches on the issue of an individual who is Tomei on the 14th of Nisan. So with regard to the Korban Pesach, which is a very special Korban, there's a built-in contingency plan whereby he has the requirement of offering it on the 14th of Iyar, a month later. This concept is known as the with regard to the tzibur, is doiche tuma, namely, if the tzibur is doche, if the tzibur is tame, if rove of the population is tame, so that that tuma is doiche the korban pesach. That is, it's doche the problem of the tuma, and the korban pesach is done on its on time. However, if the individual is tame, so he's nidche mitnei hatuma, the tuma pushes him off, and he has to wait till the 14th of Iyar. When we talk about the Tzibur Tomei doing the Korban Pesach, the simplest case, the most obvious case, is the case of Tumas Mace, that they are Tomei Mace. So if you have rove of the population that had been exposed to a mace, to a dead individual, then the Tzibur pushes off the Tumah. The origin of all of this is found in Psukim, which Rashi mentions as well. Rashi quotes the Psukim. And one of the Psukim that he quotes is, it says there, Ish, Ish, Kie, Tomei, Lenefesh. And we learn from the fact that the Pesuk emphasizes the word Ish, meaning an individual, that an Ish is pushed off by the Tumah, and the Tzibur is not. Well, everything that we said serves as a background, albeit a minimum background, for the upcoming Gemara. We will continue now in the Gemara itself. Omru Ziknei Dorom. Loi Shonu Elo Tomei Sheretz. The idea that a Kohen Tomei is Mechala Avoda, that is true only if he happens to be he has Tumas Sheretz. The expressions that we're using now should not be taken too literally and exact when we say the only form of Tumah. But in this discussion, our job is to contrast Tumas Sheretz with Tumas Mace. Some of the things that are being said would hold true with regard to other Tumas as well, but we're not going to expand our discussion into all different realms of Tumah. So for our point, our discussion, if we have to define the Tumah that the Mishnah was describing as Mechal Avoda, Ziknei Dorom says that the Tumah that will Mechal Avoda is Tumas Sheretz, Avol Tomei Mace, but with regard to a Kohen who happened to be Tomei Tumas Mace, the following applies, Mitoch Shemiratze Betzibur, since Tumas Mace, if the Kohen can L'chadchila perform the sacrifices of a tzibur that's tomei, since on the tzibur, on the public level, we see Tumas Mace is totally pushed off, and it's the korban is done lechatchila in that state. Meratze nami biyochid, Tumas Mace can pass even in the case of a private korban. So the issue is right now is an issue of finding a precedent. So in the case of Tumas Mace, we find a precedent for an allowance being made. Therefore, even on a private level, if a Kohen was Tumas Mace, b'diavad, the korban that he processed is not ruined. And that's a function of the tzitz, the head plate of the Kohen Gadol, has the atonement power or the approval power with regards to this kind of situation, Tumas Mace. The Gemara asks, if you're basing your reasoning, at least as far as describing Tumas Mace, on the Tzibur status, well, we have a triangle. Of course, now we have to explain its role, and on the side of the Gemara, the triangle is part of a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a discussion. This is going to be one of the longest ma'akavs that you're going to find in the Shas. In other words, this use of the triangle back and forth, flipping up and down, is going to continue all the way down Daf Chof Gimel Omed Aleph as well. They represent, with the point facing up, she'elos, questions, and when it's inverted, tshuvos, responses. So we raise a question. If the reasoning that we just gave to, let's say, legitimatize Tumas Mace, that a Kohen doing a korban yochid in a state of Tumas Mace the korban is not mechulal, is not ruined, we should be able to. And if that reasoning is based on how you view the public in that state of tuma, I hachi tomei sheretz nami lesi b'kal v'chomer mi tomei meis. Let us derive tumas sheretz that it should be acceptable on a public level from the way we deal with tumas meis, as follows: ma tomei meis shiton hazo shlishi shvi meratze. Mind you, tumas meis, which has a chumrah built into it, we can call it a stringency or a restriction built into it, that tumas meis, one does not achieve purification from it unless he is exposed to the sprinkling of the pora aduma water on the third and seventh day of his tara period. So we are saying, mind you, tumas meis, which has this chumrah as part of it, and yet meratzeh, it is acceptable on a public level. Tomei meis sheino ton hazo shlishi shvi eino din shemeratzeh. Tumas sheretz, which is tuma as a result of exposure to certain types of dead creatures, which doesn't have any need for hazo shlishi shvi. It doesn't have the pora aduma water sprinklings on third and seventh day. It doesn't have that extra, let's say, restriction or stringency. So eino din, certainly shemeratzit should be acceptable on a public level. And then we'll apply the logic that we said above. And if it's acceptable on a public level, so then a kohen who is tomei sheretz and processing a private korban, he should not ruin the korban. The Gemara's response: Kos savri ziknei dorom. The ziknei dorom that held that the allowance is made for tumas meis alone, they hold mechaprin kemiskaprin, that one is to compare the kohanim to the tzibur. Mechaprim are the ones that officiate, that bring about the atonement through the offering of a korban, namely the kohanim. Miskaprin are the receivers of the atonement, namely the public. Ma miskaprin tomei meis in tomei sheretz lo. Just like in the case of the tzibur, we know from psukim that tumas meis is that which is an allowance is made for, and not tumas sheretz. Af mechaprin, so too with regard to the kohanim themselves, tomei meis in, the allowance is going to be made only with regard to tumas meis, tomei sheretz lo, and not with regard to tumas sheretz. The Gemara goes on with a question. My kosavri, the ziknei dorom, what is their opinion? If we look at the Rashi momentarily, my kosavri ziknei dorom de pshita lehu de lo hutra tumas sheretz eitzel rov tzibur v'teisi b'kal v'chomer. What is their opinion that makes them think that it's so obvious that there is no allowance for tumas sheretz with regard to the majority of the public, that there's no allowance, and as a result of that, we cannot derive the kal v'chomer? Had there been allowance for tumas sheretz with regard to the general public, then I would have been able to derive the issue of tumas sheretz via a kal v'chomer from tumas meis, as we did above. So there are details the Gemara now fills in raising this question. My kosavri, I kosavri ein shochetim v'zorkin al tomei sheretz. If their opinion is that when it comes to the time of doing a korban pesach, that if the owner of the korban pesach is a tomei sheretz, so he does not send his korbanos in to be processed. In other words, that the private individual is nidche, if you hold that with regard to Tumas Sheretz, the private individual is nidche, is pushed off, namely he does not send his korbanos in to be processed, amai lo avdi tzibur betuma, then why on a public level would it not be done in a case of Tumas Sheretz? There is a rule, ha kol shebiyachid nidche, any example of a situation where the private individual is pushed off, tzibur avdi betuma, the public does do it in that same state. Elo, so the Gemara answers, Kosavri, the Ziknei Dorum hold, Shoichtim v'zorkin al Tomei Sheretz, that if the owner is, the owner of a korban is himself in a state of Tumas Sheretz, he sends the animal via a shaliach, a messenger, into the Beis HaMikdash to be processed. So the individual is not pushed off as a result of his being Tomei Sheretz. Therefore, the Yochid is not Nidche. And as a result of that, the Tzibur does not do it when in a state of Tumas Sheretz. And if that be the case, so the idea of Mitoch Shemira that we saw by Tumas Meis does not apply to the Tumas Sheretz. By Tumas Meis, and this we're explaining once again the sheet of the Ziknei Dorom, they held that since in the case of public Tumas Meis, the korban is processed, the Kohen, who happens to be Tomei Meis, is not Mechalal Avoda. But in the case of Tumas Sheretz, which is not done B'tzibur, therefore, the Kohen, who happens to be Tomei Tumas Sheretz, if he does a korban, he will ruin the korban. Omar Ula now comes in with a question directed at the Ziknei Dorom, and Ula tells us, Toka luhu Reish Lakish l'dromoi. Rashi explains the word Toka means he Reish Lakish screamed. Toka, he screamed, he shouted, he trumpeted in a loud voice toward the Ziknei Dorom, or concerning their Shita. So let's read that expression again. Toka luhu Reish Lakish l'dromoi. Dromoi is a reference to the Ziknei Dorom. Which has greater strength with regard to the pushing off of Tuma, the resolving of Tuma as posing a problem? Koyach mechaprin or koyach miskaprin? Is it the strength that the koyhanim have, the ones who process the korbanos, or the strength found in the public, the receivers of the atonement? Heve Omer, Koyach Miskaprin. We know that it's the strength that the Miskaprin have is considered greater. How is that manifest? A Yochid Tomei Sheretz is able to send his korban to the Azorah to be processed. So bearing that in mind, that the Koyach Miskaprin is considered a greater source of strength. Uma b'mokoyim shenitmeu bailim b'sheretz shemeshalchin korbanosein koyein shenitmeu b'sheretz eino meratze. That is the opinion of the Ziknei Dorom, this last phrase, koyein shenitmeu b'sheretz eino meratze. Let's go over this phrase again. Mind you, before we actually go on too much further in the Gemara, notice with the markings, we will try to make navigation a little bit easier. We've squiggle underlined the expressions Bailim and Koyin, the owners and the Koyin who officiates at the Korban. And we've dashed underlined the expression Sheretz and Mace, representing the different types of Tuma. So in focusing first on Sheretz, we say, mind you, in a place or in a situation where the owner is Tomei B'sheretz, where there is a certain type of allowance in the sense that he can send his Korban Pesach to be processed, and yet a Koyein, according to the Ziknei Dorom, who is Tomei B'tumas Sheretz, following your Shita, you meaning the Ziknei Dorom, hold Eino Meratze, that if a Koyein who is Tomei B'tumas Sheretz, he's not allowed to officiate. Mokom Shnitmu Bailim B'meis She'ein Mishachin Korbanosehen, in the case of a Korban Pesach, where the owner is Tomei Tumas Meis, where he doesn't send his Korban, then he is pushed off till the 14th of Nisan. A private individual who's Tomei Tumas Meis, he waits till Pesach Sheni. He's pushed off. And the Bailim is someone that has, in general, we speak about the Miskaprin, the Bailim, the public, the owners of the Korban have greater powers with regard to pushing off Tumah. And yet, in the case of Tumas Meis, we see the owner weakened, Koyein, the Mechaper, Shenitma B'meis. If he happens to be Tomei Tumas Meis, Eino Din Sheino Marasin, then he all the more certainly should not be capable of officiating. The question then is, why do Ziknei Dorom hold that a Koyein Tomei Meis is Meratze? The Ziknei Dorom said that a Kohen who's Tomei Tumas Meis is Meratze B'yochid, since he is Meratze B'tzibor. But from this, from the Kal V'chomer that Ula just made, actually quoted Reish Lakish, we see that when it comes to a Kohen who's Tomei Meis, he all the more certainly should not be able to be Meratze. Answer, Kos Savri Ziknei Doroim Tomei Meis, Nami Mishaleach Korbanosav, that a Tomei Meis, Bidi Eved, is also able to send his Korban Pesach in to be processed. So that that would knock out the Kal V'chomer. The Kal V'chomer was based on the idea that by Korban Pesach, the Bailim who's Tomei Meis cannot send their Korban, that point is knocked out. Hence the Kal V'chomer falls away, and the question on the Ziknei Dorom falls off. The Gemara asks, how can you say that a Bailim who's Tomei Tumas Meis is able to send his Korbanos? Does it not say in the Pasuk, Ish Kiyet Tomei V'Osa Pesach V'Chodesh Hasheni, that when the owner is Tomei Tumas Meis, he does not send his Korban, but rather he waits till Iyar, which is the second month when you count the months from Nisan. After Nisan comes the month of Iyar. So we see that he's pushed off. We see the Yachid is pushed off. So Gemara says that idea is lemitzvah. That would be the best thing for him to wait. However, if he sends his Korban in on the 14th of Nisan, it's also okay. The Gemara asks Vahaksi, but the Pasuk says, Ish Lefi Achloi, that the Korban Pesach is done dependent on the ability for it to be eaten. Now, if he is Tomei Meis, he cannot eat his Korban. And if that be the case, he cannot have his Korban sent in to be done. And that would, of course, as you can see with the triangle, that would resurrect the question against the Ziknei Dorom. The Gemara answers the mitzvah. This idea that the owner must be able to eat of the Korban Pesach, eat from the Korban Pesach, that's the best way. That's the mitzvah, but it's not a binding factor. The Gemara asks, is that true? That it's not ma'ake, that it's not also a binding factor? V'hotanya, we have the following Tanaic source. The Pasuk says, b'michsas nefoshos. The word michsas is associated with slaughtering. The idea is explained by the Brisa now, Malamed, she'ein ha-pesach nishchat ela l'menuyov, that a Korban Pesach is slaughtered only for those that are appointed to participate in it, that are counted before it's slaughtered, are become members, so to speak, of the group that are to eat that particular Korban Pesach. Shochatu shelo l'menuyov yochol yehe keover al hamitzvah kosher. Let us say that a Korban Pesach was slaughtered for people other than those that were counted to be part of it. Would that be, even though not proper, would it be kosher? Talmud Lomar tochosu. The Pasuk uses the word again, repeats the word, hakosuf shinolov la'akev. The Pasuk repeats itself to show that it is binding. The iskash oichlin l'menuyin. And the idea of those eating are compared to the idea of those that are appointed to it. And just like we said that those that are appointed to it, if it is slaughtered without them in mind, with others in mind, the korban would be rendered unfit. So too, if it's slaughtered for those that cannot eat from it, let's say they're tome, or they're arelim, or they're sick, or infirmed, if it's slaughtered with those kind of people in mind, it would also render the korban pesach unfit. So how can you say before that the idea of eating from it is simply a nice idea, but it's not binding, when we see in this pasuk that in this particular Tanaic source that there is a hekesh between oichlin and menuyin. There's a comparison made between the issue of those that eat from it to those that are appointed to it. And just like those that are appointed to it, if the korban pesach is slaughtered without them in mind, it would be rendered unfit. So too, the issue of achila is ma'akev. The Gemara responds, Zikne Dorom Lo Makshi. The Zikne Dorom don't make the comparison between the Oichlin and Menuyin, that albeit a Menuyin is Ma'akev, but the issue of Oichlin is not Ma'akev. We find ourselves in the middle of a discussion, but because the nature of our shiurim is each shiur is a single daf, we will conclude our shiur at this point.